I guess it was about 5-6 weeks ago or so. I got up here, it was Mother's Day, and I gave everybody a great tip on how to salvage Mother's Day if you had forgotten that day was here. And so I thought it would be only fair to return the favor and do it again for if anybody in this room forgot that it was Father's Day today. And so here's what you're going to do. You're not going to go to Costco like I sent the last one. What you're going to do, you're going to go to Target. All right, you're going to go back to the toy section, specifically the Lego aisle. All right, you're going to buy a box of Legos for your husband. All right, and you're going to let him watch a movie or the rest of the U.S. Open or something. And I know what you're thinking. My husband's a grown adult. He doesn't like Legos. Yes, he does. All right. Yes, he does. Every guy in this room loves building things. And if you got me a really awesome car or like something from like the Avengers or something that I could build while watching golf, that is the greatest Father's Day in the world. All right, so. That being said, let's talk about Jesus. So today we are going to focus on a different story from what the last couple that we've looked at in this series for Jesus is Good News. We've been kind of looking at all these different encounters, these interactions that people have with Jesus as a way to understand how these stories ended up spreading and as a result spreading the gospel. And the past few weeks that we've been looking at kind of like people's interactions with Jesus, but they were always kind of like strangers, and they were kind of like one-offs. And today, we're going to look at an interaction Jesus has with his disciples, guys who were like following him around for about 3 years. And these might actually be the most important people that Jesus can teach when it comes to how to spread the story and the news about the kingdom of God, because these are going to be the ones that are going to, you know, like actually go out and do it. They're going to be the first leaders of the church. And what Jesus is going to do is he's going to really kind of instill something in them, which is that don't get lost up in all the words that you feel like you have to say. Because in the end, your actions speak louder than words. There's a reason why we continue to tell people this to this day. There's a reason why we teach our children this, that our actions speak louder than words. And so in this same way, how do you understand your actions as a lens into how to live faithfully? And the way that we understand that comes from this passage, which comes near the end of Jesus' ministry. Says, it was just before the Passover festival. Jesus knew that the hour had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. The evening meal was in progress, and the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So, he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, wrapped a towel around his waist, and after that he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, Lord, are you going to wash my feet? And Jesus replied, you do not know what I am doing, but later you will understand. No, said Peter, you will never wash my feet. And Jesus answered, unless I wash you, you have no part with me. Then, Lord, Simon Peter replied, not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well. And Jesus answered, those who have had a bath need only to wash their feet. Their whole body is clean. And you are clean, though not every one of you. For he knew who was going to betray him, and that's why he said, not every one of you was clean. When he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place and said, do you understand what I have done for you? He asked them. You call me teacher and Lord, and rightfully so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you should also wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. Very truly, I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. It's a very long passage, but I kind of wanted to set that entire scene for you to see this entire story play out. Jesus knows what's about to happen. And he takes that as an opportunity, rather than going on a lecture, to just physically get down and wash the feet of his disciples, something that, you know, a servant would have done for their master. Flipping the script on all the disciples, where literally Simon Peter's like, no, I do this for you. You don't do this for me. Like, this isn't how this works. And he goes, no, stop talking and pay attention. There's a reason why there's a concept known as servant leadership. And it's not just a fancy buzzword. That's like an actual philosophical understanding of how one can lead an organization. Like, it has its own Wikipedia page and everything. You should look it up, but like after church, right? And so in this, servant leadership is this idea that if the top leaders within an organization begin to serve everybody and everything that they can, it will have a greater impact. That rather than focusing on quarterly earnings, rather than focusing on performing metrics, rather than focusing on any given number or value that could be tracked, they set and focus on how is it that they can serve their people and build their people up and develop their people into others who can go out and serve in the world as well. And the fascinating thing about this is that the organizations that have embraced this as a leadership model end up thriving. They thrive so much more, in fact, than the ones who focus on actually trying to thrive. That by focusing more on people, they end up doing greater than if they had focused in like the number sense than if they had only focused on the number sense. And so they get the added benefit that they're also improving the lives and well-being and mentality of all of their people as well. And these are things that like Marriott, Starbucks, massive organizations do this. My favorite one of these is an organization currently run by a man named Dan Cathy. If you don't know who Dan Cathy is, he has a father or had a father named Truett. Truett was a prophet from God for whom God gave the recipe for the greatest chicken sandwich that has ever been made. And he used that to create Chick-fil-A. All right. The Cathys own the Chick-fil-A empire, and God decided to play a joke on all of us by making us crave it on the one day that they would not sell that chicken. The funniest example of that, by the way, and this is absolutely true, in Atlanta, Georgia, where Chick-fil-A is based out of, they put a Chick-fil-A in the new Atlanta Falcons Stadium that opened up about 5-6 years ago. Atlanta Falcons are famously for, you know, play on Sundays. They're literally like fans that walk by an empty Chick-fil-A every single game and have never eaten in this thing because it is not open on the days that they actually play the games. And I think that's hilarious. But in that, Dan Cathy is worth $7 billion. $7 billion as the son of the guy who created Chick-fil-A. So, you know, he could hire anybody to do anything he wanted. And in that, people who have interacted with Dan will say, no, he actually has the most servant heart that you could possibly imagine. So much so that this guy, who's worth, again, $7 billion with a B, teaches a Sunday school class in his local church every Sunday. Which I, like, is there an application process? Because, like, I would love to get into that Sunday class because I assume he brings free food every Sunday and that's the only way to get it. The other thing that the guy will do is that, like, if you meet him for a meeting and he meets you down in the lobby of, like, the Chick-fil-A headquarters, he will literally empty the trash bags on his way back to his office with you. And I look at that action and I think, like, man, if ever there was a guy who had all the excuse in the world to not do that, it's probably him. Or any major, like, CEO of any major corporation. Because they obviously have a lot going on. Anything that reaches their desk is something that like requires a great amount of wisdom, expertise, influence, etc. And yet he takes the time to do something that literally anybody can do. But it's actually what develops the culture that he's working so hard to ensure never leaves. Because just like Jesus said, no servant is greater than his master. In that same way, what he understands is that like nobody in his organization will ever think that they are better than him if he's always the one that's actually doing the job that every single person ought to be doing in the first place. And so the question is, like, why don't all of us do that? And the reality is like we often come up with like really good reasons and excuses why like we don't go out and we don't serve and do things. Like, yeah, all of us could do like pick up trash and that would be really great. But like you think about something that's like, well, go tutor kids in math, and you go like, listen, I don't have a heart to like sit with kids, and like I get that. Or it's like, hey, like, you know, we just had massive storms, like, and we need people with chainsaws that can go and, like, you know, cut up branches and hollow-away branches and that kind of thing. And you're like, listen, I don't know how to work a chainsaw. And so, like, that's going to go really poorly if I grab one. And that's fair. You probably shouldn't do that. But all of these things that we tell ourselves, all the reasons why we say we can't go out and serve others, frankly, I actually think just come down to our desire to protect our most precious commodity, which is our time. Because every other thing that we have in our lives is replaceable or could be grown, etc. Like our wealth, we can increase. Our possessions, we can get more of. We can develop more relationships with people if we really want to go out and like build new friendships. Everything in our lives is we can grow upon, except for time. There are only so many minutes or hours in the days, and we tell ourselves, well, however we use our hours, we want them to be used in such a way that have the greatest possible benefit upon our lives, which does make sense. The question is whether or not we actually believe anything that we're currently doing is going to have the greatest impact on our lives, more specifically, that it will have a greater impact than our willingness to go out and to live like Jesus instead. Because the fundamental reality of this is the fact that, like, we were made in the same image of God that Jesus was. And so, like, Jesus had all the same capabilities, thoughts, emotions, etc. that we have. And yet, he was the most perfect example of a human who's ever lived. And so, if we want to be the most perfect example of a human, have the greatest life that we could ever possibly have, it stands to reason that we ought to try to live a little bit more like him. And frankly, that means looking at the thing that is the most precious to us, is the commodity that is the most absolute, the most finite, our time, and realizing that we've got to be willing to sacrifice. And that until we're willing to do that, we're never going to truly experience the joy that Jesus had in this world, because Jesus came into this world with this very simple statement of just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. He came into this world to serve and to sacrifice. To serve and to sacrifice. And the reality is, we actually do know and understand what this is. And there are places in our lives where we are willing to do this. Saw a post on Instagram this week. It was the most absolute perfect thing I've ever seen, which is like dads will be out here eating the most burnt pancakes ever in order to ensure that their kids have the good ones. We will be out here eating the most burnt, messed up looking pancakes in the world and worse tasting so that our kids and our wives and our family have the good ones. We understand sacrifice. We understand what it means to actually like put down what we want for something else. We just have to reorient this world and to see it with the same love and compassion that we have for our family. And I'll be honest, I didn't fully grasp that until my son was actually born. Like I remember when my son was born, obviously, like, you know, you have like that moment in the hospital where everything's going great and they're just bringing you stuff and making sure that you know what's going on. And then they're just like, all right, see you later. And then you like go home and you're like, I'm going to break this child because like there's a soft spot on the head and I don't understand how that works. And like, nothing makes sense and the internet's not helpful and the pediatrician thinks I'm crazy. And like, so then you go from like being at the high of high into the like most chaos of chaoses. And it spirals from there for about 3 to 4 weeks because you're like getting delirious from a lack of sleep. And then you finally get to a place where you start figuring it out. But for those first 4 weeks or so, it's like, it's really tough. And I remember looking at my son, looking at my wife, and being like, I will do anything I have to do for them right now. Like, I can muscle through anything. And there's this moment where a buddy of mine sent me a message. And it was just like, hey, just checking in on you. Just checking in on you because I know you're probably doing a lot to take care of your kid right now. I hope that's going great. And I know you're doing a lot to take care of your wife right now. And I'm going to check in on you because I know you're sacrificing so much for them right now. And I just want to let you know you're doing a great job. I love you. Let me know if you ever need to talk. And it was everything my heart needed in that moment, in the sense of like, sacrifice is hard, but it's that much easier when somebody who loves us and cares for us recognizes it. And the reality is like in that moment, that was all that I cared about, because like what my wife was going through and like, you know, coming out of like giving birth was something I could never understand, because like guys don't do that, right? Except for that one movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito, right? Where he got pregnant. It was really weird. It's from like 1994. Don't go watch it. It's like bonkers. But in that, we don't understand it, but we do understand what it means to put everything aside for them. And so in that same mentality, you know, as we like celebrate Father's Day, there is a reason why it is important for us to see God as a parental figure. Because maybe you had a bad father, I don't know. Maybe you had a great father, I don't know. But what you ought to know is that we get to worship a God who loves us and sacrifices for us in the way that those students were talking about their dads. But to the umpteenth degree. And so for us, we just have to figure out how we continue to reorient our lives and the world around this mentality of seeing through the eyes that God does, which is seeing through the eyes of genuine, true love, because it is that love that will inspire the best kind of service, the best kind of getting on your knees and caring for somebody else to wash their feet. I thought about this in anticipation of today, because as awesome as today is Father's Day, today is also my wife and I's anniversary. And so we got to, got to celebrate this morning and got to do Father's Day this morning. Oh, that's awesome. But I think about, like, what is it that makes a really phenomenal marriage work? And the irony is that there is a specific passage that is simultaneously the best passage and the worst passage when it comes to understanding the best way for a marriage and, by extension, our relationships in the world to work. Because there's this passage from Ephesians that a lot of people have heard of. And in Ephesians, it says this: submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her to make her holy, cleansing her by the washing with water through the word, and to present her to himself as a radiant church without stain or wrinkle or any other blemish, but holy and blameless. In the same way, husbands ought to love their wives as their own body. He who loves his wife loves himself. After all, no one has ever hated their own body, but then fed and they care for their body, just as Christ does for the church, for we are members of his body. For this reason, a man will leave his father and his mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. This is a profound mystery, but I am talking about Christ and the church. However, each one of you must also love his wife as he loves himself, and the wife must respect her husband. Now, there's another passage, another little bit that I took out that's like, wives, obey your husbands. And I took that out because I don't need any fathers getting cocky on Father's Day and trying to tell their wives, like, you know, you should listen to me, because, like, that's not going to go well for any of us. But in that, it's so funny because that passage has been used so many times to, like, explain how a wife and how a husband ought to work in a marriage. And honestly, often, too often not, people focus on the wrong part of it, which is they say, like, oh, well, there's that bit that says, like, wives ought to obey their husbands, and they focus only in on that, and they completely miss the point, which is that Paul literally says, I don't understand marriage. It's a mystery to me. I'm talking about Jesus and the church. You should love each other. Because if you don't know, Paul was never married. And in fact, he said nobody should ever get married, which I interpret as Paul was not very good at talking to women, all right? The very first sentence is, you should all serve one another. The last little bit is, and I'm talking about Christ and his church. And we get focused on the middle part instead of focusing on the fact that everybody is called to serve everybody and to love one another with the same compassion and grace and drive that we love our spouses. But if we begin to love each other the way that Christ loved the church, well, it means you sacrifice. It means you give up everything. Everything you possibly can. And this is where we see this actually take place, because we're having VBS this week. And in VBS, you should know that as much as we have 500 kids who are going to be coming up here, which that number still blows my mind, there has been countless hours of volunteers who have been up here decorating this place. There will be an entire army of adults and teenagers who are helping serve the church and serve these kids over the next week. Later on today, more decorations will be going up, and there's one particular guy who, he is the spouse of one of the chairs of kind of the decorations, and last year he built like this massive like 40-foot rocket, and today I think he's coming in and he's like building a submarine and stuff. And do you know why he's doing that? He's doing that because it's his best way that he can love his wife, but more importantly, it's the best way that he can serve this church. It's a way for him to serve his community in the same way that he can serve and love his spouse. And so as we go through the week and we find example after example of like, well, you know, I don't know that I can serve here. I don't know that I can serve here. The reality is, can we just find one place where we decide to give up some of our time for somebody else? In the realization that when we do it, we're actually going to benefit that much more personally and spiritually as a result. As you leave today, if you hadn't already grabbed one, there's these yellow wristbands with the names of our adult and our teen volunteers. And my ask is that the way that you serve your church this week is that you grab one of these and you put it on and you pray for that one name. You take 5 minutes from your day, five of those precious minutes, and you give them to Jesus and to that name, praying that they might be spiritually enriched as they go forth to spiritually enrich our kids. And see how that 5 minutes then change your whole life. Let's pray. Gracious, loving God, you came into this world to serve so that we might go forth and serve ourselves. In the midst of that, God, allow us to go forth and to love. Allow us to love the world as we love our spouse. Allow us to love the world the way that you love the world, sacrificing yourself for it and finding joy in the process. It's in your holy and blessed name we pray. Amen.